understand something. Why is it that, I mean, he's like a serial exaggerator or fabricator of his own personal narrative. He's been asked about it twice, once by Dana Bash, once in this debate. And in both cases, he sort of defaulted to some, like in Dana's case, it was, I don't have good grammar. Tonight, I think he said, you know, well, I'm just a knucklehead. Why can't you just sort of own up to it? I don't understand. Yeah. I know you said people think he's authentic and that, you know, this is just who he is. But he has clearly gone way over the line on his own personal narrative, something that only he would know the facts of.
Yeah.
And he's done it repeatedly. And when asked about it, effectively, he's just like, well, I'm too dumb to tell the truth.
You know, Scott Jennings on CNN there talking about the serial exaggeration of Tim Walz. It's interesting because the exaggeration that you get from Tim Walz, there's not also this other understanding of who he is. There's not really other substance outside of the exaggeration other than the insistence that we call him coach. Like, that's just supposed to mean something. Let's get to our friend Jerroy Murdoch to talk about last night's vice presidential debate, nationally syndicated columnist and Fox News contributor. Jerroy, welcome back. What'd you think of last night's debate?
Annie, great to talk to you again. I thought it was a very good night for J.D. Vance. He came in with a lot of people having heard that he's mean and weird and cold, misogynistic, maybe racist, and he came across, I think, as calm, incredibly relaxed, self-confident in a good way without being arrogant, and very empathetic. I think at one point, Wall said something about his 17-year-old son witnessing somebody being shot, and Vance said, well, I'm very sorry to hear your son went through that traumatic experience, or words to that effect. I thought he came across as very open and very interested in the plight of women, talking about women being able to earn more money, to give themselves more options, being able to have more financial success to take care of things like childcare. And I thought the humility he expressed on abortion, that the GOP had to do better on that issue, I think really was just very candid about the fact that GOP's had trouble expressing ourselves very clearly on that issue since the Dobbs decision. I think that humility probably went far towards giving him at least a second look on the part of maybe even pro-abortion women who might have turned their backs on him initially.
Yeah, I think that there was such a human element. I'll even extend it over to Tim Walz last night to be able to watch two candidates who were supposed to be on opposite sides of the political aisle have a conversation that was still shrouded in a gentlemanly exchange of thoughts and ideas. There wasn't really any raised voices. The only raised voice that might have come from last night was J.D. Vance talking over the muted mics. No muted mics, no fact checking. And there you have CBS muting J.D. Vance's mic after they fact-check him incorrectly, and he fact-checks the fact-checkers, but they apparently didn't want to have anything to do with that.
Yeah, we heard from CBS that they were going to break from what we'd seen in the previous, not so much the first debate, but certainly the second, with the moderators fact-checking Trump 5 times, Kamala Harris 0 times, even though Kamala Harris said repeated things that weren't true. And despite the all the publicity about, oh, we'll leave the fact-checking to candidates, the moderators, in fact, fact-checked J.D. Vance a couple times, and he fact-checked the fact-checker, if you will, on that. So I thought that was well done. And yes, I agree with you. The debate was incredibly cordial and very low-key. I guess there just isn't that level of animosity that you saw in the debate between Trump and Harris, who, as far as I can tell, pretty much loathe each other. And I think the Trump-Biden debate, where Trump was pretty restrained, he didn't seem to get angry, but I don't think there's much love lost between Joe Biden and Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, DeRoy, when you were listening to Tim Walz and his exaggerations, and we've listened to Kamala Harris repeat the same lines over and over and over again. She was raised in a middle class family. We know that. I don't even know what it means at this point.
Yeah, what does that mean, right?
I mean, many people were. And if you rise above that, that's still something to champion. I think that the right is correct on that issue. But we don't have a lot about what these two individuals on this Democrat ticket want to do that is different than what we are experiencing right now while Kamala Harris is in office as the vice president of the United States. Are they trying to make a case that it's a new way forward other than just saying over and over and over it's a new way forward?
you know, I'd love to hear a candidate come out and either say, I was born dirt poor. You know, we barely could find dinner every night. You know, we had to forage through garbage cans for lunch. Or I was born on a yacht. We had caviar every night. I mean, either one of those things would be refreshing at this point. Everyone seems to be born in the middle class. I think you make the same point that J.D. Vance made a couple of times, which is if the ideas Kamala Harris is presenting as the new way forward are so great, why does she go to Joe and say, Joe, hey, why don't we push this? Let's sign this now. Frankly, if she did that and she could get these things signed while she's, you know, on the campaign trail, imagine Joe Biden, flying out, meeting her somewhere in Arizona or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin and signing the bill that, provides this $5,000 down payment for housing, or the price gouging legislation that she wants to do, whatever it is. She's had 3.5 years to push these ideas if they're so brilliant, and she hasn't done so. And if she is pushing a new way forward, a question that suggests that the current way is one that ought to be abandoned, except the current way from which we'd be going forward is the way which we're on now for the last 3.5, going on 4 years under Harris and Biden. So she's in the unusual situation of being essentially an incumbent who, rather than embracing her own program, as Ronald Reagan did when he promoted Republicans in the 82, this goes back 42 years now, in the 1982 midterm elections, the slogan all Republicans used was stay the course, you know, could continue with Reaganomics. The thought was during the recession of 82 that the benefits hadn't kicked in, but if we stayed the course, eventually they would, which they did. But instead, she's saying we need to get off this course we're on. Don't stay the course, abandon the course, even though the course is the one that she's produced. And if it's such a wonderful thing, we should reward her, even though she's basically saying the current way forward is a bad one. We need a new one, which suggests that we need to get rid of the incumbent. So it's a very contradictory message, which is why Harris and Wall seem to trip over their words so often.
Yeah. Troy Murdock speaking with us right now, Fox News contributor and nationally syndicated columnist. All of this to say it just matters what the American people, the American voter, takes away from it. I mean, we have one debate where I think we could summarize the whole thing, and they're eating the cats and they're eating the dogs. I had seventh grade volleyball players singing that at a volleyball practice, and I'm like, do you know who said that? And they're like, yeah, Trump. And I was like, okay, keep serving. It's so bizarre that you can have these things of great consequence. They get on the internet, they get transformed into memes. It just matters what the American people take away from it. And we might be done with debates right now. Do you think that they've swayed the American public one way or the other?
Well, I mean, certainly the first debate did. That was the end of Joe Biden's political career. So that was probably the most consequential political debate ever. I think the second one seemed to be kind of a wash. I think, frankly, Kamala Harris did a better job in the debate than Trump did, although the polls didn't really reflect that. She didn't get much of a bounce. In fact, Trump might have gone up a couple of points afterwards. I think that this debate last night definitely will work, I think, to some degree to Trump's benefit. Again, we'd heard from the media. They just, of course, went completely overboard, talking about all sorts of bizarre things about J.D. Vance having, I'm trying to think, how can I put this politely in a family-related program, a deep and abiding interest in furniture.
A relationship with a couch.
A relationship with anybody wants to look that up can go look that up
or
on
don't.
Your own.
Yeah.
Thing about single women with cats, you know, the cat ladies and all this, and that he deep down doesn't like women and he's weird and on and on. So I think people who didn't know much about him probably tuned in expecting to see that. And that guy wasn't there. We saw a young, very self-confident, very well-spoken political leader who was very much in charge of his brief and understood what to say and was very, very relaxed and calm. And then with Tim Walz, who a lot of people may never have seen before, he seemed very jumpy, very nervous, very defensive. He couldn't give a clear answer as to whether he showed up in China before, during, or after the Tiananmen Square massacre. His answer to that was just a mess. He could have said, look, you know, I guess, after 35 years, I got the date screwed up. Sorry about that. No, that would have been a credible answer. I conflated my arrival there with what happened a couple months earlier, and I mashed the two together. People do that sort of thing. But, he didn't give a clear answer. He seemed very, very evasive on that. And I thought probably the best line of the night, as far as I'm concerned, was when J.D. Vance said that President Trump doesn't just have a plan, he has a record, and talked about all the stuff that that Trump did when he was president, that he's already been president for 4 years. And we had an economy that was thriving at the time. We had peace in the Middle East. We didn't have Iranian missiles landing in Tel Aviv and throughout Israel. We had the Abraham Accords with, I believe, Bahrain, Dubai, Morocco, and Sudan signing peace agreements with Israel. Peace breaking out all over. Now look at the place. The place is literally in flames. So I thought that was a very good way of reminding people that Trump has been there before and was there up, at least certainly up until COVID. We had things in pretty good shape. The border was under control. Crime was under control. Inflation was 1.4% versus almost 3% now, and as high as 9.1% at one point under Biden and Harris. I think the one thing I wish Vance had done. Number one is, I think every time Vance and Trump speak before any audience, get in front of any mic, they should ask the question, are you better off now under Kamala Harris, or were you better off under Trump? And I think almost anybody objectively will say things are better under Trump, number one. Number two, in three debates, both the Trump-Biden debate, the Trump-Harris debate, and then the Vance-Walls debate, I did not hear either Republican discuss no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, or no tax on Social Security benefits. Those are three big ideas, very good ideas, and I don't know why they're not in these fantastic opportunities to share them with tens of millions of American people, not discussing those policies. But for some reason, they just forget to bring them up, which is really too bad.
Yeah, it really is quite something. Well, I think that we've got 34 days left in mm-hmm. Illinois, where I live. People are voting already.
And unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. But we got to get out, and we've got to get poll workers signed up. We have to work to get ballots harvested where it's legal to do that. You know, the Democrats are going to be doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And I really think that, you know, we have these conversations right here, and it helps people kind of think through and develop their own perspectives on these issues. But the real measurable effect of debates like this, it gets people talking, and those person-to-person contacts that are happening, not on the radio, but, you know, in the office or with family or at the sports game that evening, I think those are the ones that are going to have a major impact. I think you do a wonderful job of helping lead those conversations for those people when they listen to the show.
Well, thank you very much. And I agree with you. You know, a lot of people think, gee, what can I do? I don't own a PAC. I can't write a $50,000 check, whatever. You know, if you can't do anything else, register to vote yourself. Make sure your friends and relatives and neighbors are registered to vote. When you go to vote, bring those folks with you. And then in your conversations with your friends, your relatives, people at the barbershop, folks at the grocery store, your fellow workers at your work site, talk about this stuff and, educate them. You know, a lot of people hear things like, Trump wants a bloodbath, and just tell him no. He said there would be a bloodbath in the auto industry if at that time Biden got reelected. He said both sides in Charlottesville were very fine people. No, he said that did not apply to the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis. And just explain to people a lot of what they've heard, unfortunately, if they just listen to the regular regime media, is either inaccurate or an outright lie or totally fabricated or any combination of the three. And so if nothing else, you just give people the facts, the figures, the reality and the truth. I think that will be a huge service. And so I urge everybody who's listening to us, you know, if you can write a check for $100,000, please do. But if you don't, you know, register to vote, make sure you put folks you know are registered to vote. And then, educate those people in your own circle about the truth about Trump and Vance. And frankly, the view, I think, that we're all better off under Trump than we back in his time than we are currently under Kamala Harris. And if you want to keep bring the good times back, the answer is obvious. Vote for Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, it's a completely obvious answer. You're absolutely right. Droy, thank you. As always, we love talking to you. Thanks for being here.
Great talking to you. Okay, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Droy Murdoch, nationally syndicated columnist and Fox News contributor. Great to have him on the show with us. When we come back, I'm really excited to have Todd Sivia in studio with us, a new sponsor of the Annie Fry Show. He is the attorney and owner at Sivia Law. You can go to SIVIA, SiviaLaw.com, to learn more about what he can help you with, especially when it comes to wills, trusts, estate, probate questions. These are questions that I often have because you don't know about this stuff until you know. Maybe you have a friend or a family member that is having to deal with an estate that really wasn't planned out or filed or thought through. I want you to give us a comment on the Annie Fry YouTube channel if you have questions you would like me to ask Todd about estate planning and recommendations on how to get this done in a way that might be unique to your situation or just general questions that you have. Powers of attorney as well. He is ready to answer your questions. We're going to have some conversations with him for the rest of the 1 o'clock hour. So I'd love to include your thoughts and questions in that as well with Todd Sivia, who's in studio with us here on the Annie Fry Show next.